we have a cocktail and try to have fun with it and realize that business can be boring enough, so why not have a little bit of fun with it?
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
It's Monday. You know what that means? It means time for another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. My name is Joe Cassandra. Coming on soon, my partner Dan Franks. Today, in round one, we talk about three elements of your website that you need. So whether you have a blog or whether you have some sort of e-commerce site, it doesn't matter. You need these three elements to succeed. In round two, we talk about 10 mistakes that online businesses make, and that's brought to us by Corbett Barr, who's going to come on in the main event. Corbett Barr, the Think Traffic Pan Man of all things traffic, and also one of the hosts of The Fizzle Show. He will be on to tell us those 10 mistakes and then also give some traffic tips, of course. But before we do that, make sure you head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com for the show notes. And we have our 5x5 deal. All you need to do is put in your email. You're going to get 5 different packages of plugins, productivity tools, tips from the top experts on how to succeed. To get that, it's for free. Just go to entrepreneurshowdown.com, put in your email, you'll get it direct access, and we'll always be adding to that. So, without further ado, let's get on to round one.
Round one.
To kick things off today, Joe and I want to talk about three key elements that you must have for a website. And we're talking about very generic elements that apply to any website, but they're things that are very important to have regardless of your niche, your theme, your style, any of that. And let's just dive right in. The first one that Joe and I picked out, and it's all based on an article from TresnickMedia.com, so we'll link to that. But the first one is consistent navigation. And this one's huge. The whole idea of being able to get to anywhere in your site from anywhere in your site, it seems very simple, but if I don't know about you, Joe, but if you've been to any of these websites that try to be super artsy or super fancy with their navigation design, a lot of times you get so lost in it that you end up having to retype the domain name to get back to the homepage just to get to a different page on the site. Have you ever had to worry about that?
I remember with one of our guests that we'll be talking to in a couple weeks when we were trying to look for content for their site, it was even just hard to because you click like the blog icon. And then it brings up like little images instead of like a list of posts. It was like images for each post. But then it was just confusing if these were the most recent posts or the most popular posts. And so you're clicking on the sidebar to try and get to another area that may has a list. And then it's just confusing when if you just make it simple and just maybe even have I don't think we use category tags, but if you really have everything split out that like if it's a personal finance or something like that and you have for your house, for your personal expenses, whatever, and you need those categories, even though it's not pretty or anything, it's a lot better to just do something simple like that than if you have like a lot of products on your page. Like if you just look at Amazon, maybe theirs is a little confusing just because they have millions and millions of products, but I think they do a great job because I mean, first, if you know what you want, you can just go to the search bar and type it in. But say you're not sure, they have everything broken out into different categories, and then those categories are broken out once you scroll over them, and then you can sort and switch and whatnot. And that's a little more detailed site, but just that could just be like an example in your head of okay. If I want to break down my site in a certain way, what's the easiest way I could do that without having to someone has to click millions of different places?
Yeah, and I think 99% of our listeners probably use WordPress like we do. And WordPress almost makes it hard to mess up this navigation. Like by default, most themes are going to have the top nav bar and, you know, a consistent sidebar. So anything you put in those is going to carry consistently through the site. So as long as you make sure you can get to any main area of the website through one of those two, you know, either the sidebar or the nav bar at the top, then you're probably going to be doing all right. And I think the one place that maybe you and I might have to work on the navigation a little bit, or maybe we don't have to, but I've seen other people do things differently. And that's linking to show notes from our podcasts. So a lot of times we'll just say, for the show notes of this episode, head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com. But what we don't ever give out the full web address of the specific episode people are listening to. And I noticed some people do that. But I think maybe, I don't know, do you think that's something we should start doing? Have you heard other people do that? What's your thought on that? We haven't talked about that before.
Well, our strategy when we did that is because when we're just starting out, we don't have tons of posts. So when we have a guest that's guest 5 or 6 or something, we could just say, go to entrepreneurshowdown.com, and then they'd have to go to that site, and then they'd have to click the post to get further show notes. So our bounce rate would go down, we'd get more page views and whatnot, which looks better in SEO purposes and Google's eyes. But maybe now, since we're expanding our catalog of interviews, if someone listens to, just like Andrew Warner, our very first interview, and we say, okay, go to entrepreneurshowdown.com for the notes, and then they go there, and we're on episode 30 or whatever episode we're on at this time, and they have to go all the way back to page 1. I mean, they're not going to make it there. It's not going to happen, because no one's going to flip through that many pages. Or then they'd have to go to Google and type Entrepreneur Showdown, Andrew Warner, just to get to the page, which I'm sure becomes a pain and a hassle after a while. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's something we'll have to work on for the future. For actual just like navigation on the site, I think we've done as good a job as we need to. We're not overcomplicating anything. But yeah, since for listeners, I mean, I guess we could start working on that.
Yeah, so that's just something that came to my mind, maybe an extension of this article and how it applies more to us and some of the other podcasters that might be listening. Well, the number 2 must-have element for any website is clean or clear branding. So no matter what, kind of the same thing. If you're on WordPress, this is easy. Just make sure your brand, logo, image, name, whatever it is in the header. And then no matter what part of the website people go to, they know you're still on your website. They haven't clicked a link that took them to an exterior page or a page that's, you know, not yours, that maybe has some of your information, but it's not your page. This way they know if they're on your page or if they're not. And this can kind of even carry over to your social platforms, having that same logo, that same branding, and that same imaging, whether you're on Twitter or Facebook, so people really know they're at your more or less official platforms.
Well, I agree with the consistency part. But if, say, you have a smaller site, it's not like a big Amazon-type site, but usually just run by a couple people, I think also you have your logo, but you should also be putting your face and your name and whatnot on the site as well to build your own personal-type brand. I see a lot of sites, and I would when I first started off doing stuff online, I dabbled a lot in like the personal finance area, and so many of them, they hide just behind like an avatar, and you have no idea what they look like, who they are. And a lot of them will just use the excuse of, oh, well, I don't want my coworkers at work to know that I write for a site or anything like that. And some of these sites, they actually they're ranking pretty well. Like, so the Alexa ranking may be under 100,000, which is pretty good nowadays. And they won't want to be showing their face anywhere because they're afraid of what people at work would think. And I think that's total garbage. You have a great chance to show, hey, look at what I've built, look at what I've done, and you can put it on like your LinkedIn or your resume and everything like that to show something that you've built, which automatically makes you stand out. And a lot of people lose that opportunity because they want to hide behind some avatar or whatnot, and I think that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I somewhat agree with that, and I think that's kind of an extension of this key element to your website. But yeah, I can agree with that if take every opportunity to brand what you're doing, whether it's your brand of your website or your personal brand, and, you know, the opportunity to link all those together. I can see how that's definitely something that should be tied into any website if the opportunity presents itself. So let's look at the third one here and see what you think about this, Joe. And this is, what is your value proposition? You have to have a value proposition, and it has to be apparent on your website. So if there's something that you're doing really well, or a specific niche that you're targeting because this is who your website is for. You need to have some way to explain this or display this to the audience so they know, yes, this website is the website for me.
Yeah, and that's something that we're working on still, is trying to develop our very unique selling proposition. And it's hard to do it sometimes because you feel that you want to stay very general and you don't want to go down too deep, because then if you have another topic you want to discuss and you feel like you're could lose potential listeners because you're veering off of what your USP defines. But I think if you have something at the very beginning, and I think our name kind of brands it a little bit and kind of gives a unique selling proposition just in itself, because it automatically sounds like a challenge, and there's some sort of face-off going on, which I think is a unique aspect that we have. But maybe we're missing some sort of tagline or some quick sentence that says how we're different. I don't know. Maybe that's something that we can improve on.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we're not super niche down, but we're niche down. We're not the business showdown or something like that. Like, we're specifically branding ourselves as being, you could look at it and say it's by entrepreneurs, for entrepreneurs, that kind of thing. Like, all our guests that we have are entrepreneurs, regardless of whether we're getting super entrepreneurial discussion with them or maybe a top level business discussion with them. Like, our guests are entrepreneurs. You and I are either, you know, depending on what we consider ourselves, either entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs. And our target audience are the same thing as us, entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs. So I think just by in your brand, in your tagline, having even one word, that can start developing that value proposition. But one person that I think does this really well, and it's an interview that just went live recently as of this recording, was Gwen Reyes from Real Vixens. And her website, from the very onset, it's a movie review site by women for women. And they say that. So everything you read on that website or every video commentary they show, it's written by women from the perspective of women to tell women how maybe they, you know, how they're going to interpret these movies or how they're going to view these movies, what they're going to think of it. So that's very niche down. But at the same time, their value proposition is that, hey, that we're targeting women to get the most value out of this. And it's not saying that if you're a man, you can't read it, right? But it's, they're just coming out front, up front, and saying what their specific niche is, making it very clear. And I think that's a good path they're taking. So that's just three elements that Joe and I wanted to throw out there that we think should go into any website. And obviously nothing too specific, because all websites are different, but I think all websites could value from making sure they have all three of those in place. But that's it for round one. Let's get on to round two.
Round two.
It's round two time here on the showdown. And in round two today, we're going to talk about an article written by our guest in the main event, Corbett Barr from Think Traffic, from the Fizzle Show podcast. And this article that he wrote was called The Top 10 Mistakes in Starting an Online Business. And this is from a few months ago. It's not the latest article like we typically pick out, but we picked this out because we really like to have some discussions about tactical information, things that a lot of people can that are listening, whether new or old, can really put into use once we talk about the content and talk to the author of that content. And this piece is interesting, the top 10 mistakes in starting an online business, for a variety of reasons. Now, a lot of these things that Corbett mentions in this article are things that are pretty obvious, things that you hear about a lot, things like not starting soon enough, you know, sitting on your hands as opposed to taking action, or not really listening to what people want. It's more like you're just doing what you think is right. But one of the things I thought was really interesting was Corbett's take on the whole love versus money idea. And this is something that we keep going back to, but Corbett is fairly firmly planted on the whole idea of you need to have deep care for your subject, or else, and he said it doesn't have to be your number one passion, but you really have to have some kind of passion for it, or else you're not going to succeed. Joe, do you have anything new on this after reading Corbett's take on it?
For him, yeah, he's always been about being very customer reader oriented, where he always talks about, hey, you should respond to as many emails as you can and respond to comments and everything like that. I think it's interesting how he says it's top 10 mistakes in starting an online business, not as much any type of business, because I'm sure he would have different ones for another maybe startup type opportunity.
But this is his specialty.
It is a specialty.
But he's done some software stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, and that's where he got his start, and we'll definitely send our listeners to some links in the show notes to his background. But yeah, he did get a start, you know, in the getting some venture capital funding on a software startup, and it didn't pan out according to planned. And since then he's done more of this traffic generation strategies, and that's why I thought this was actually interesting, because a lot of the times you hear Corbett talk about driving traffic to your website or building an audience for your website. And we'll get into some of that with him, but this is more about his tactics for starting an online business, because look, he started a couple really successful online businesses, and while he teaches that in the new Fizzle course, what he's been doing for the longest time with Think Traffic doesn't necessarily teach that so much. So I think it's kind of a gateway into something that he's starting to teach people now that he wasn't before.
Well, now that you mention that, his whole site is about getting traffic, but none of the mistakes he talks about has anything really to do with marketing or networking or anything like that, which, I mean, since his whole site's based on it, you'd think that'd be an important part, is the marketing aspect, because especially when you're starting out, when you're trying to build something online, when you're getting exposure in a certain way, that is something that motivates you when maybe you're in the dumps or you're feeling like no one cares. That traffic or that exposure is what kind of keeps you going, and he doesn't talk about that at all. He doesn't talk about the marketing or the importance of networking with other people in your industry or outside your industry for maybe mastermind purposes, idea extraction, anything like that. He just talks about more focus on your customers, and that's kind of a jump for if people who are coming on here from the very beginning, maybe they haven't started anything. He kind of jumps over that little small part. So this isn't really tailored for someone who's starting from scratch. It's more with someone who's already had some customers, already had some traffic and exposure. So I thought that was interesting because he's so big on the marketing and getting traffic that he doesn't mention any of that.
Well, and actually, on the contrary, the one kind of reference to traffic that he does make in this blog post is saying, don't worry about it so much, right? He says something about the traffic being, if you're focusing too much on traffic and not about what you're producing, be it a product or a service, then you're doing yourself a disservice, right? That's what he says, which it's really weird to me because it seems like, you know, you and I have had this discussion before. Well, like we want to build this audience before we have anything to offer, right? Or else it's the tree falling in the woods theory.
Yeah, but he's saying
you have this great product.
That.
Yeah, but he's kind of saying launch the product. Don't wait too long to launch the product. Don't wait until you build an audience. He says when you start blogging or podcasting to build an audience, it's easy to get stuck on the hamster wheel for months or years without ever offering something. So it sounds like he's almost saying don't worry as much about the traffic, that the traffic will come with the product or service.
But then that kind of goes against his other type points where he's saying don't solve an unimportant problem, listen to your customers because they're the ones who are going to help you out. But if you're just starting out and you're just trying to build an audience and you don't know what they want and you don't, maybe you haven't even realized what type of skills you have to offer yet to them. And he's friends with like Pat Flynn and John Dumas who started just from building an audience, not as much just putting a product out there first. And of course we know their success and we've had them on the show. But he's kind of going against that type of idea, and that'll be something interesting to talk about since we have heard from people who are on the other side of the coin.
Yeah, and he specifically says don't just build a blog or a podcast with the idea of maybe getting some advertising dollars down the line. He thinks you should, it sounds like, I shouldn't speak for him, it sounds like by this blog post, he thinks you need to have already something in mind, like a product or service already in mind as you're launching your blog or podcast, so then you can monetize right away. And that's interesting because maybe we're doing it wrong, right?
Let's get it. We need to get on that at some point.
Yeah, or do we? I mean, maybe we're misinterpreting it. So I think that's important to ask him. And it's funny because we had an interview a little while ago that we were talking to a successful business owner, and we told him our idea of, well, we need to build this audience first, and then once we have this audience, we can really get a grasp for what they want. And that kind of goes along with one of Corbett's things, like listen to your customers and figure out what problem's so important that they need someone to solve. But if you're pushing this product or service too fast, like he also says, or like you need to push it faster, then maybe you don't know. So there's a couple things, opposing viewpoints in this article that I think will be interesting to touch on with him. And maybe these aren't meant to be looked at all at once. maybe these are 10 mistakes that people make that they could fix, but not necessarily all at once.
Yeah, maybe they're not connected. Maybe he hasn't experienced all of them, but I think there's some, maybe there's some holes in there. Maybe there's some contradictions that we'll have to see if we can see if he'll admit to any of that.
Well, he's a super successful guy, and we can learn a lot from him. And he's coached some of the best. He's coached Pat Flynn to his some of his success, and like you said, with Dumas as well. So a lot of people that are doing a lot of good things have relied on Corbett to help them out in their journey, and hopefully all our listeners will get that as well when we bring him on coming up next in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Today's guest in the main event is a traffic man. Not the kind that points people in the right direction while leaving church. No, he's the master of traffic on the internet, and only the good kind of traffic. Corbett Barr has become the go-to expert when it comes to optimizing your online presence and getting the oh-so-valuable traffic to your virtual home. But the best part is, Corbett doesn't teach any sleazy or spammy tactics that leave visitors feeling lied to or ripped off. He's all about top-quality content and doing things the right way. We're definitely going to get into some of the traffic talk in a bit, but what we brought Corbett on to talk about today was the topic of our round two discussion, which focused on what he thinks are the biggest mistakes entrepreneurs make when starting an online business. So with the topic so full of discussion points and tactical information, I don't want to waste any more time. Corbett Barr, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Fantastic introduction. You sound like a radio professional.
Moonlight, I guess. Moonlight is a radio amateur.
There you go.
Close enough.
Good. Now
we definitely like to dive right into the matter at hand here in the showdown, but for anyone who might not be familiar with you or your backstory, can you give us maybe a couple podcasts that you've been interviewed on that tells your story really well?
Definitely. The first would be my own podcast, which is called The Fizzle Show, and I think in episode 3, we dive pretty deeply into my background, so that's one. Let's see, another one that would be good... Joey Kissimmee has a podcast.
All right.
And
Joe.
You know Joey?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had him on way early in our show. Okay. He's a good, great guy.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, that was a good one where we got pretty deep into my background as well, I believe.
Awesome. We'll definitely link to that. We always like to show Joey some love.
Joey.
All right. So let's dig right into this topic that Joe and I discussed in round two, and that's the common mistakes made when starting an online business. Was there anything happening in your business that caused you to write this specific article, or was it just kind of a culmination of a lot of things that, you know, you see from your clients?
You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to remember why I wrote that. Oh, actually, I had been to the World Domination Summit, which is a really great conference in Portland that Chris Guillebeau organizes. And there I talked with a whole lot of people, and they kept asking over and over again, like, what do you wish you had done differently? I think there's just this feeling that people have that they're making mistakes, or that they're afraid of what they don't know. It's always an interesting thing to ask people who have already done what you're trying to do. Like, what do you wish you had done differently? Just to make sure that you don't make those mistakes.
Well, something I thought was funny that you pointed off before you got into some of the mistakes and what they were, is you said that this is something that new and old people, or I say old people, new and seasoned veterans seem to fall prey to, is this this thinking of mistakes. And you say the new people are always asking, hey, what are the mistakes so I don't make them? And then the old people are always saying, here's my mistakes, don't make them. Yet, for some reason, people keep making mistakes. Where's the disconnect here?
I don't know. I mean, there's probably because there's just too much to read online, and or too many conversations to have, and it's in one ear and out the other. And a lot of us, me included, I think we just learn by doing better than anything else. And so sometimes you have to make the mistake in order to learn from it.
Well, just quickly, because you were in, you've done some software work. Would you say these are the 10 things for any business or just the online business?
Definitely, I think some of these things will apply to online businesses, but the fundamentals of any business are really the same. I mean, you have to make something that people want, and you know, do it in a way that you can afford to, like, try not to run out of money in the process, basically, and then tap into an audience and connect with them, and you know, and find a good path to those people. And all of that stuff is true whether you're online or off. I was, you know, I've pretty much always been in the online world. It's just where my interests lie. But, you know, from what I know about the offline world, it's pretty similar.
Well, just from something that we discussed in round two, you have these 10 things, but you don't talk a lot about marketing for people when they're just starting out, when they're trying to grow. You don't say that's a big mistake, is to get out there and start marketing. Do you still feel that way?
Well, I do say, though, that not listening to customers is a big mistake that I've made in the past and that I see people make. And to me, that's what marketing is. It's really understanding your market, connecting with them, and trying to create something that they want. I think a lot of people, when they think of marketing, they only think of like pushing your message out there. But really, if you're listening to your customers and connecting with them and figuring out, you know, where they are and where you can find them, then that's really the, you know, the core of marketing, the underpinnings of it. And that's a big mistake that I've made in the past, building something in a vacuum, thinking that, you know, in a year, this thing that I'm building is going to be really great, and then I'll put it out there. And, you know, if you build it, they will come, only to find out that people don't like it and that you don't even know where your customers are or who they are. So listening to your customers, you know, connecting with them, having conversations, really sets you up well in the beginning to do marketing later.
Well, and this idea of not listening to customers, this and putting this compared to some of the other mistakes that you list out, are what Joe and I kind of focused in on, because we saw that some of them kind of had opposing viewpoints. And that was, like you just said, not listening to customers. And that's a huge problem. But then on one of the other ones, you said waiting too long to launch the product, like don't necessarily wait until you have this big audience. So there seems like, you know, which mistake shouldn't you make? Should you wait and build an audience and then have customers to listen to? Or should you build a product and then, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think that my approach is generally to find an audience and find customers and listen to those people at the same time that you're building a product. I think that the old method of, you know, building a company or building a product was really to start building the product and then eventually worry about marketing as you got close to launch. And really, I encourage people to start building a platform, to start connecting with their audience, and then to ask their audience to find out what their audience wants and needs, and to start building something. But when I say that I waited too long to launch a product, I'm talking specifically about when I got started. I did start audience first, which I'm glad I did, because it gave me a lot of ideas. But even after I had an audience that was plenty big enough, I mean, really, you know, what you're trying to do here when you create your first product is not necessarily to hit a home run, but just to find out if the idea that you have has legs and if it's going to take off. And you don't need a huge audience to do that. You basically just want to create something, put it in front of them, and find out if people like it and if they're willing to pay for it. So I kept building and building and building. And by the end of the first year or so of blogging, I had 500,000 people or so had stopped by my site. And that's way more than I needed to prove out what it was that I was trying to build. I think my problem was that I talked myself out of building a product for so long. You know, there are a million excuses you can come up with in terms of, oh, this isn't right, I'm not ready, who am I to do this, nobody's going to want this. There's just a lot of negative self-talk that can happen that can keep you from creating something. And there are always other opportunities that seem to be better. You know, there's always something else that you could be working on. So I ended up waiting 15 months to put out my first product when, you know, I could have done it after 6 months or so. And of course, you know, hindsight's 20/20 and everything's fine for me now. But I see a lot of people who wait so long to put out a product that they run out of steam, they run out of energy, they run out of money, their audience loses interest, and then they never get off the ground. So I think there's a real danger there that if you wait too long, you might, you know, end up just folding the entire enterprise.
So how do you approach a customer that, because we're in that stage where we're just building an audience right now, and we've heard people on both sides of the fence say, hey, build an audience first. Some people build a product first. What do you say to, if you are just starting to grow, what do you say to your audience to maybe gauge what kind of product you should give them?
Well, it's a good question. And you guys are podcasting, which brings up other interesting things, because, you know, podcasting is the type of medium where your customer might not be your audience. Your customer might be advertisers or sponsors or partners that you want to work with. You know, and that's something to consider. I think that, you know, generally you can monetize better by creating your own product, but in the beginning, it might be that your customer isn't exactly who you think they are. If you're going to go to your audience, the other issue with podcasting, of course, is that it's people are listening to us right now, and it's hard for us to listen to them because there aren't comments directly here. And it depends on, you know, where you're publishing, but in iTunes, it's kind of hard for people to leave you direct comments. Mm-hmm. So you need to have your own platform as well, because you want to get in touch with people. You want to, you know, be able to reach out to them to ask questions and literally have one-on-one conversations with potential customers to find out what they're struggling with, what they like about what you're doing, how you could take it a step further for them, and really help them solve a problem. Because we're, you know, we're attempting to help people solve problems in this conversation, but a step-by-step, you know, hand-holding process to get them from point A to point B to help them really slay a dragon. That's probably what you would create from this. I'm assuming that it would be some sort of information or software product. And you really need to have conversations with people to figure out what that could be.
Well, you had just started co-hosting on the Fizzle Show, and we had Tom Heuer on a couple episodes ago, and he was saying that it's a lot better to do blog type format to reach your readers and gain influence instead of podcasting. With you starting this show, are you kind of shifting to the podcasting side, or are you just trying to do like a be everywhere type thing?
Well, we're doing both, and I don't recommend being everywhere. I think it's really easy for people to get overwhelmed and to spread themselves too thin, and then end up kind of fizzling out basically because they're trying to blog, trying to podcast, trying to be on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and everything else. And really, I think you need to figure out what your strategy is and who your customers are and where it's best to reach them. What I found out through blogging and podcasting is that podcasting has an unparalleled ability to engage with your customers. And I like what you guys are doing because you're not just interviewing people, you're having your own opinions, and people will get to know, like, and trust you because of the conversations that you have outside of interviews. I think there's a risk with only doing interviews because you don't actually bring your own voice and you don't get the trust that you want from your audience because they're constantly listening to other people's stories. But for us, what podcasting has done, even though the audience isn't necessarily as big as our blog yet, what we're finding is that podcast listeners readily convert to customers because the level of engagement is so high. Imagine people are listening to us for an hour every week, and they're getting to know intimate details of us and our lives and our strategies, and we're in their ear hole, for lack of a better term, really in there intimately with them, and they feel like they know us by the end of that. And so those people convert to customers on a, you know, individual basis far more readily than the average blog reader would, because a blog reader stops by, skims an article, and then leaves. Maybe they subscribe, but, you know, it's the rate of subscription is rather low. So I'm a big fan of podcasting. I wouldn't say that blogging wins by any means, but remember that if you have a podcast, it's difficult to reach people because if they're subscribing in iTunes or something, you don't have the ability to really push messages to them when they're important. You don't know, they might be listening to this episode a year from now or a month from now or whatever. So I like the combination strategy where if you're going to do podcasting, you also need to have a platform yourselves that you direct people to so that they can connect with you, get more information, and then that's how you really could get feedback from them and eventually roll out a product.
Well, I think Joe and I appreciate your know, like, and trust, implying that at some point people will trust us. I think we've got the know and like part down. I'm not sure I'd advise anyone to trust us quite yet. That's why we're leveraging some of you guys that actually are a little more trustworthy than us. Not by choice, but you know, we're learning along with our audience with a lot of these things.
Yeah, so. And that's a great approach as well. I totally recommend that. I think a lot of people feel like they have to wait until they're experts to start, you know, sharing what they've learned or start sharing, you know, connecting with people. And it's silly. Why not learn in public along with the people that you're trying to reach and help?
Well, and you mentioned that you guys are basically using your podcast to supplement your business, what the service you guys are offering at Fizzle.co. But do you see any viability, or I don't want, maybe not viability because there's people doing it, but would you recommend someone create the podcast as a business, or do you think it's better to supplement another business?
I mean, There are definitely people who are podcasting as a business. You know, I think that there are plenty of people that are running little podcast networks right now, which is kind of interesting because that's a better way to reach out to advertisers and have a broader reach. I know individuals who are running podcasts that are doing pretty well with sponsorships. So, you know, it's not a bad approach. For us, it was a different question because we already had a business in place and we started podcasting to reach our audience in a different way and to connect with them in a different way. And frankly, also to have fun ourselves. I mean, we're finding right now that of everything that we do in our business, sitting down to record a podcast episode is really the most fun that we have during the week. We kick back, we chat about things, we have fun, and people like us because we have fun on the podcast. So, I'm a huge fan of podcasting, and I don't think you can go wrong necessarily by building up your audience and then looking for sponsors or some way to fund that activity to buy you time to look to create a product, because creating a product takes so much time. And if you're really serious about building up your podcast audience, I'm sure that it's taking you a lot of time to do that right now as well.
Well, I know you guys have fun doing the podcast. I forgot which one of you it is. Actually, Dumas told me it wasn't you, but one of the other guys enjoys kicking back with a cigar and a Coors Light. What was the third component there, Joe? Do you remember?
Wasn't it Scott's or something? Was it Scott?
Yeah, that's right. No, Scott's Coors and Cigar or something?
No, that's Chase, my business partner, Chase Reeves. He has a photo on his Tumblr. It's a cigar, a Coors Light, and an espresso. So that's his magic balance there for great ideas. But no, on our podcast, we sit back in the afternoon. We try to record a little bit later in the afternoon, and we have a cocktail and try to have fun with it and realize that business – you know, our topic is business, and business can be boring enough. So why not have a little bit of fun with it?
Yeah, Chase.
Wait, we can have a beer when we do this, Joe? You told me no drink.
You have to be careful. You got to be careful because one beer is like, you know, it gets you warmed up. It's social lubricant, that sort of thing. More than one, and if you record for a long time, you know, it can be a dangerous territory. So we've had to kind of find the balance there.
Well, let me just speak for everyone. As much as you guys think Joe might have had a little too much to drink on any prior episodes, I can attest that he hasn't yet, but he might in the future now that he heard that. So
it's a good idea. Well, we're going with since we're talking about starting up something and getting a product out there really quick, looking at just Fizzle.co based on your podcast, you guys already have something up for a membership and something, and you guys have only been podcasting for a couple months because you were still in New and Noteworthy when we started in mid-July. So was that the idea that you guys had? Okay, you're going to launch, and right away we're starting up something. We don't want to sit around thinking of ideas. We just want to start something and start pushing out a product right away.
Well, this business that we're running has been an evolution. I mean, I started blogging 4.5 years ago and have gone through different products and different iterations. And we launched Fizzle last September. It's been almost a year now. And after we launched Fizzle, we tend to have a game plan that extends out 6 months or a year or longer. And when we launched Fizzle, we had this idea that podcasting would be really fun, but that we really wanted to dedicate enough time to it to make it to make sure that it was successful and to make sure that we did a really good job with it. We didn't want to just start podcasting as an afterthought. We treated it like a project from the very beginning, and we kind of scheduled it out. We said, we're going to launch Fizzle. We're going to go through different iterations with that. We're going to build that up as a product. And then in around, I'd say, April of this year, we set aside a couple of months to start planning the podcast, to start listening to other podcasts that we hadn't before, to really feel what was out there and figure out what we wanted for our format, brainstorm a bunch of topics, practice, plan out the launch, and then really run into it full steam. And we started out with a bunch of episodes in the can already to make sure that we didn't run out of steam. And you know, luckily for us, we found out that we really love it, and it's been fairly easy. And as I said before, the pleasant surprise has been just how many podcast listeners are converting to product buyers because of that level of intimacy and engagement that we have through that medium.
Well, something you mentioned at the beginning there was one of the things that was a mistake on your list, and that's not planning far enough out in advance. You say a lot of people are too short-sighted. They're planning in the terms of weeks or months, whereas you said you guys plan out maybe 6 months, a year, maybe even multiple years ahead. What are some techniques and strategies you guys use to plan out so far in advance?
Well, you know, I mean, plans are just guesses generally. It's just a longer term informed guess. Today, actually, I was on the phone with Chase, my business partner. He's driving up to Portland. He's going to the XOXO conference going on up there. And we just had a long range planning discussion where we kind of brainstormed stuff like, what does the next 5 years look like? And what do we think we want to be doing in the next 5 years? What do we think are possibilities? And that conversation isn't necessarily about nailing things down and putting them on the calendar, but it's about making sure that we're keeping an eye on the longer term. Because I think that a lot of people, when they start businesses, they get really wrapped up in looking for immediate results. And they start out with these expectations that, you know, I'm going to quit my job and travel around the world and start an online business. And, you know, in a few months, I'll be making an income. And in 6 months, I'll be supporting myself. And then, you know, they end up not getting anywhere close to that because everything's just a lot harder than you think it is. And they're focused just week to week to week. And instead of thinking, okay, I'm going to be in this game for the next 5 or 10 years or longer, I want to make this a really important thing, make this my life's work. And how can I make an impact over that period of time and just realize that things are going to take a while? And I think that sets you up for success, ironically, in the shorter term, because when you focus on the longer term, people feel that you're dedicated and that you actually care and you're trying to do something that matters and makes a difference, as opposed to just me, 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 you know, in the short term. And then your customers connect with you more deeply, and they believe in your journey, and they can connect and support you along the way. And then that just sets you up from an expectation standpoint, and also just from a customer standpoint to actually succeed in the short term. So there's a bit of a paradox that happens there. And that's why I really encourage people to think about the longer term.
Well, I know most people, they feel vulnerable when they start talking about 5-10 years down the road. Do you just talk about it with like Chase and Caleb and your team, or do you ever go beyond that and maybe people you like friends that aren't in the same space, you ever share it with them? And maybe I don't know, it gets me out of my comfort zone sometimes when I do that, and I was just wondering if you ever do that.
Yeah, I think anytime you feel out of your comfort zone, that's a good thing. It means you're pushing yourself and growing, and if you spend weeks feeling totally satisfied and comfortable with yourself, then you know you've probably gone stagnant. Having those thoughts and conversations about, you know, what are things going to be like, not just for me, but for our industry in 5 years, that shows a level of commitment, I think. And it is scary. You know, it's scary to say, this is what I'm going to be doing 5 years from now. But it really does put you on a playing field that not many people are on, because there are so many opportunists out there who are just looking to make a quick buck, to dip their toe in the water and see if this thing's going to work out. And, you know, it rarely does when you're just looking for a quick opportunity. Things rarely work out. So committing and telling not just yourself and your team, but, you know, friends and the world that this is what you see happening over the next 5 years, this is what you're trying to achieve, this is your vision. It's bold. And like I said, planning is guessing, so it's not going to work out the way that you say it's going to. But just, you know, having that conversation, I think, actually, you know, puts you in the right mindset.
And this relates to one of the top 10 mistakes, and it's going at it alone. And you really harp on the fact that having either other entrepreneurial friends or a partner in the business or something really helps. Can you expand on that a little more? Not necessarily just on like the goal and the goal setting and the planning, but just as day-to-day operations or anything like that, how having somebody along your side is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, the type of person that feels like they have to do everything themselves and that they're going to sort of toil away and work on this thing and make it perfect and then share it with the world and hopefully people like it, but rarely they actually do.
Is that how you used to be? Hate to cut you off, but you were at it alone before and now you welcomed on a team kind of.
Yeah, totally. And to me, going it alone isn't necessarily just about your partners or, you know, the mentors that you involve or relationships like that. It's also about the customers. I think that a lot of people try to go it alone, building their product without having any customers or audience in mind first. And that's another fatal flaw. But for me now, you know, basically, I worked as a lone wolf for a couple of years. And then started looking around at the things that I wanted to do. And frankly, just the fact that it kind of gets a little bit boring to work by yourself all the time. And I brought Caleb Wojcik on 2 years ago as an intern originally, and he's turned into much more than that. And really liked that experience of working with someone again. But I grew it very slowly and organically, which was something that I didn't do in my last go around. I raised venture capital for my last business, and we ended up with a team of 10 people pretty quickly, and that had its own challenges. So this time around, I wanted to grow things very methodically and organically, and I wasn't sure that I'd ever hire somebody or build a team. But now that I've started doing it, it's just so fun. Like listening to you guys right now on this podcast, I can hear the chemistry, and you know, I can tell that you guys have a lot of sparring matches and conversations over things, and that's good. It's fun. It invigorates you, and it brings new ideas to light that you're not going to have when you're sitting there by yourself, staring at the desk or at the wall in front of your desk all the time. And I also realized that there were things that I want our business to represent and to embody that I'm not necessarily capable of. And so, you know, as I've been looking for people to add to the team, we're three people now. The other two people that I've added, I've looked for skills that I don't have, that they have, that they can bring to the table. And it just rounds us out and makes us a lot more potent as a team.
Have you ever had a partner or brought like a close friend on that didn't work out because of just different viewpoints or vision?
Yeah, I had a co-founder in my last venture, and we didn't know each other very well when we first got started. We had worked together briefly at a prior company, but you know, we weren't really friends necessarily, and we jumped into a startup together, and you know, without really realizing that a partnership, if you're talking about a co-founder or a partner, it's really like a marriage. I mean, it's a very intimate relationship, and you're going to be talking to this person day in and day out for years. And if things don't go the right way necessarily because you have different viewpoints or whatever, it can get very ugly, and it eventually ends up in what amounts to a divorce, you know? And that's how it went for me the last time. We just ended up really diverging on our viewpoints of where the business should go. And then when we got into dire straits financially because the financial world collapsed in 2008 and we couldn't raise another round of venture capital easily to keep the team together, we just ended up arguing a lot over the future of the business. And ultimately, we essentially got a business divorce. And I moved on, and I look back on that now, and I'm fine with it because it marked a turning point in my life. I actually took a sabbatical after that for 6 months and went to Mexico with my wife and hit the reset button and started asking myself deeper questions about what I wanted out of my career and my life and how the two should be integrated. And it just sent me on an entirely new path. You know, now I live in Mexico actually every year for 3 months. My wife and I spend time traveling elsewhere. We were in Italy for a month earlier this summer. And I run the business while I'm traveling. And I just realized, like, what was I waiting for? I was thinking about trying to hit a home run, trying to, you know, become rich and famous so that what? So that eventually I could live my life. And why couldn't I just start living my life now? And lo and behold, I decided this time around to live my life while running my business. And it works just fine. There's no reason you can't do it. In fact, I'd say that my business does better because my life is more interesting. And, you know, frankly, I'm probably a nicer person to be around because I enjoy mm-hmm. myself and my life.
Well, you seem like a very nice person, Corbett.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that.
So speaking of being interesting and a little off topic here, but where's your favorite place to go in Mexico? And what's your favorite authentic Mexican food?
Well, my favorite authentic Mexican food is definitely the taco. The taco is so simple, but it's for some reason it's so hard to get right, you know? And when you have a great taco that's not much more than a couple of vegetables and a good salsa and some sort of base and some really fresh tortillas, it's just a magical thing. So that's my favorite. It has to be accompanied with a good Mexican beer, of course, in the afternoon. And then my favorite place to go, we live in a little town in the state of Jalisco on the Pacific coast, which is about 4 hours south of Puerto Vallarta. It's just a little 3,000 person fishing and surfing village. And this is the kind of thing that you see sort of dotting the Mexican coast. And people don't tend to venture out of Puerto Vallarta or Cabo or Cancun or whatever, but it's definitely worth it if this is what we discovered on our road trip. I mean, we did a sabbatical to Mexico, and drove around the whole country for 6 months and just got to know a lot of different places and to experience the country in a different way.
Do you know Spanish now?
You know, we speak a little bit of Spanish, enough to get by. The sad thing is that, you know, you end up wherever you go with friends who speak English and expats and also just locals who pick up English really quickly. And it's just all excuses for not putting myself in enough situations to really learn Spanish well, but I do okay.
Well, my wife will hate me if she ever hears me asking this, because she's first generation from Mexico.
Oh, cool.
But she always tells me that siestas aren't a real thing. But come on, you got to tell me. You take a siesta every afternoon in Mexico, right?
What? Where is she from that she says siestas aren't a real thing?
She's first generation American, but her parents are from Chihuahua.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you that siestas are a real thing, at least where we live, and I participate in that wholly. around 1:30 or 2 o'clock after lunch, it's a nice time for a nap. It's hot outside. Siestas are such a real thing that I see people working really hard jobs, labor jobs. For example, I saw a dump truck in a quarry as we were driving by on a dirt road after a surf trip, and I saw a guy who had a big piece of wood that he had pounded into the ground behind the dump truck and then hung a hammock in the shady part, you know, behind the dump truck, from the truck to this piece of wood, and was taking a nap there. And then his buddy was underneath the truck on the dirt, on the ground, taking a nap at like 2 p.m. in between work. And I see this all the time. So tell your wife I don't know I don't know which part she's familiar with, but siestas are definitely true.
I'll tell her my friend Corbett Barr, who lives in Mexico, says that.
Good.
No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. My white friend tells me.
Yeah. Who doesn't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
There you go.
Going back to, I guess, the main topic that we were talking about, you talk about how a lot of people, they treat their blog as, well, they think their blog is some sort of business. And we just had Chris Ducker on, and he was talking about he talked about the same type of thing, but he talked about how you need to switch your mindset from being like a content creator to treating it like a business and thinking about how, like, forming a monetization strategy. Are you on that same type of mindset?
No, Chris Ducker is full of crap, actually. No. I'm kidding,
we'll
actually.
Tell him that.
I'm kidding. Chris is a friend of mine, and I agree completely. Actually, he knows what he's talking about. Chris runs a big business. We all like to talk about business, but most of us run small businesses compared to Chris. He has like 200 person company in the Philippines, but yeah. He's absolutely right. I mean, I think it's very easy to get trapped into the mindset of, oh, if I just put out one more really great blog post, you know, if I just get a few more people, you know, then I'll be successful. And the question is, like, what's success? Like, if you don't have any way to actually earn revenue from your site, you're just putting content out there over and over and over again, then what's the end game? And are you going to have enough stamina to eventually figure it out? This gets back to what we started talking about, where, you know, you can wait too long. You can wait so long that you end up giving up because you just get trapped in what Clay Collins called the hamster wheel of death, the content hamster wheel of death, you know, just running on that thing and never getting anywhere. So when we coach people, you know, we do try to get people to create an audience first, because it's invaluable to get feedback directly as you're trying to solve a problem for those people and create a product. But I really like them to have an idea of what is the product that you're going to create and start building the product and the audience sort of simultaneously. Because, you know, the fact is that if you want your business to stay in business, then you have to earn revenue. It's a pretty simple formula.
Now, going back, I guess, kind of crossing over to a couple of the things you talked about in this piece, I have a question. Is the customer always right? Because you use that exact quote in there, the customer is always right. But when we had Pat Flynn on, we talked to him about his product launch, and he had not a lot of pushback, but more than he expected as far as his audience saying that's not what they wanted, but he stood his ground and said, no, I think this is what's right. So is there some circumstances when the customer isn't right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I say the customer is always right, I mean, basically that means that, you know, without customers, you don't have a business. So in that way, they're always right. Now, when it comes to the details of what you're creating, no, they're not always right. And of course, there's that, You know, I think it's a Steve Jobs quote about, you know, if Henry Ford had asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And, you know, maybe we wouldn't have ended up with the automobile like we have it today. So definitely, I think it's a balance. You know, you have to listen to your customers and try to listen to that with the filter of someone who understands their problem and is trying to create a solution for them because they might not be able to do it themselves. You know, so you're serving your audience and you're trying to solve their problems, but realizing that the way they describe the problems and the solution that they're looking for, you know, maybe they don't have the same vision that you have for creating a solution. So I think it's a balance. You know, listen to people and give them what they want, create something that they want, but they don't always know exactly what they want when they're describing it to you.
Well, this one wasn't on your list, but I hear about it all the time as people or they abandon their sites and everything because of this. But a lot of times, because everything on the internet, you don't always know if it's 100% accurate. But a lot of people, they compare themselves to other people, compare themselves. Like just today, we saw someone who's new with their podcast. They just hit like 1,000 downloads or something like that. And we're like, what the hell? We haven't hit that yet.
In a day.
Don't. Yeah. Sorry about that.
But you're not the numbers guy, I take it.
Dan's more on top of that.
Yeah.
But do you see a lot of people, they go through that huge phase of they're comparing themselves to even just you or a lot of other people?
Yeah. I mean, I did it for years and beat myself up over it. It's part of that entrepreneurial, that the emotional roller coaster that you go on as an entrepreneur is, you know, always thinking, well, who am I? I'm an idiot. These other people are so successful and, you know, I'm never going to get there, that sort of thing. And in the end, I think what happens, you realize that eventually success starts when you start walking your own path and you really embark on your own journey instead of just trying to copy other people or live in other people's shadows. And, you know, you also really have to be careful about paying attention to numbers like that, even though, Joe, it seems like you don't necessarily care too much about those specific numbers, but I know that it's easy to look at numbers and to say, oh, they hit 1,000 downloads. And then to realize that the raw number of downloads or visitors or Twitter followers or whatever it is has zero bearing on whether or not the people on the other end of that thing, that blog post, whatever it is, whether or not those people know, like, and trust you enough to actually pull out their wallet and purchase a solution from you. It says nothing about the engagement that you have with those people. And this is something that's taken me a really long time to get comfortable with because I used to chase numbers as well. You know, if only I could get to 1,000 visitors a day or 10,000 visitors a day or whatever it was. And then you realize that, well, shit, like you can get a blog post to go popular on StumbleUpon and you can end up with hundreds of thousands of people in a month. And what does that prove? What does that do for you? Because all of those people leave. None of them stick around. None of them actually care. They're just hitting the next button on their computer. And, you know, it ends up eventually teaching you that the most valuable thing is having influence over the people that are listening to you. And you really have to tune in to your audience and tune out all of the competitive influences out there saying that you're not good enough because you don't have X number of downloads. Just really focus on trying to build true fans. I'd rather have 10 people who jump up and down and scream and say, I love this. I can't believe how awesome this thing is that you created, versus 100,000 people coming to my site and nothing to show for it.
Well, this leads me perfectly into the last thing I wanted to touch on today. And I promised our audience that you were the traffic man, so we have to get some traffic tips from you. What are the top things that are working right now for you for driving traffic to your and your clients' websites?
Well, the thing that always works is, first of all, there's just a little multi-step process here. So first of all, creating something that people want, obviously. Okay, that's the underpinnings of it all. So you can do all of the different tactics that are possible online for getting traffic. And if in the end you have something that nobody wants, then they're just not going to be successful. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to try to differentiate what you're doing as well. Because when people come to your site, they're going to be wondering, why should I spend any time here when I know that there are X number of other sites out there that are already doing this better, you know? So you have to differentiate yourself. You have to make what you do unique and explainably unique so that people can spread the word and say, hey, you should check out blank because blank, and you have to fill in the blanks there. Then the third thing is, you know, once you have something that people want and you've made it, you've positioned it as something that's unique, the best way to get traffic for me has always been creating relationships with other people who are responsible for big audiences that would be interested in the thing that you have to offer. So, for example, you know, what you have to figure out is there are people out there online who could be interested in your thing, and they're already spending time somewhere on different sites. So the question is, how can I get in front of those people where they're already hanging out and then to bring them back to my site? Now, for you guys with the podcast, obviously, you're thinking, well, the people who might be interested in our stuff are obviously already hanging out on iTunes, so we'll publish our podcast on iTunes, and that's one way to bring people in. But in addition to that, you should be thinking, well, where else are people hanging out? Well, you know of other blogs where people are hanging out, obviously. So how can you create relationships with the people who own those sites and try to be guests as interviewees on their show? Maybe try to write guest content for them and just try to build up these friendships, genuine friendships over time, so that then when you have friends in the internet world, those people will want to see you succeed and they're going to try to help you out by mentioning your stuff and telling people about how great you are. So relationships for me have always been the big thing. You know, when I started again, it was 4.5 years ago. And a lot of the people that I connected with were no-name people at the time. These were all people that were starting out. But the thing is, if you have a good eye for looking around at your peers and the people that you're connecting with now who maybe don't have an audience but seem like they have that spark or that magic touch, like you know that they're going to go places, connect with those people now and build friendships where they're not worried that you're trying to use them or they're not an A-lister and you're just some, you know, one of hundreds of people that are reaching out to them every day. Connect with those people now because in a year from now, you know, you mentioned like John Lee Dumas, like he started a year ago. And if somebody had become friends with him, then, you know, it's much easier to forge that friendship then. And now, obviously, you know, he's on top of the business blog, business podcasting world. The same was true for me with people like Pat Flynn or Adam Baker, people that I connected with 4 years ago who now, you know, are, you know, on top of the world. And it's great to know those people. And they've sent me a ton of visitors over the years.
Well, you had talked with Pat Flynn about this in 2010 or whatever, whenever you were on his podcast. And I was wondering if it's still kind of relevant today. But like one thing we do kind of based off, and this was kind of inspired from James Altucher. He says that Google is the best company or the most giving company in the world because everyone comes to their site just to like get clicked away from it. And that's what they want. And one of the things we try and do is we try to get as many, we try to get as much, as many links as possible as we can to link out to other people. And that's why we also ask you what podcasts have you been on to get your story so we can link to that show and help that show out. We haven't seen too much traffic from it, but is that somewhat of a good starting block for us?
Yeah. So I call that strategy naming names and we do it as well. I mean, basically, you know, if you persistently link to the people that you admire, that you genuinely admire and that you believe your audience will benefit from, that's a great way to get on those people's radar, you know, and it's a great way to break the ice too. If you reach out to them, it's like, hey, you know, hey, Joe, I mentioned you on episode 5 and episode 10 and 15. You can see the links here and whatever. And that's a great way to break the ice and to, you know, show that you care about these people and that you have been influenced by them. And it's flattering, you know, and it's a good way to get on their radar and to start those friendships that I was talking about.
Very cool advice, Corbett. We appreciate your time today. Let everyone know where the best place to go to find out about you is.
Best place is thinktraffic.net. We have a site there with the article that we're talking about now, along with over 500 other free articles all about how to build a thriving and profitable audience online.
And real quick, you were at one point trying to brand CorbettBarr.com. Where did that go?
Well, you know, eventually you can only blog so much. You can only run so many podcasts, so many blogs. And I ended up merging that personal brand in with Think Traffic, because for me, the long-term strategy is really to build up the brand that we're working on now, which is Fizzle. And my personal brand is just embedded in all of that already.
Very cool. We see a lot of people going the one direction that you originally went into, branding yourself. But it's good to see somebody saying, you know what, it's okay to go back the other direction too. So we appreciate you sharing that. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Corbett. We had a great time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. You guys, like I said, you have good chemistry and good questions, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thanks, Corbett.
All right. Thanks, man. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.